is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. We're coming to you from coast to coast, as always. Michael Lombardi out at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. We got lots of NBA postseason talk to get to today. The countdown to the NFL draft continues, and some interesting NFL news just in general to get to off the top of the program here today as well, Michael. But first and foremost, hello, good morning. How are we doing today?
We're great. Congratulations. You didn't take the bait. You didn't think something was fishy, that maybe the Lakers weren't going to play, and it got close until Zion got hurt. You know, I thought he was going to kind of lead them to a victory, but then with the hamstring, I thought he had a stomach pull because he reached for his stomach, I thought, on that shot he made. But congratulations to you on a bet well done.
Every now and then, Michael, we don't crash and burn. But, a good win there. It'll be fun
more,
to see.
More now than then, Stormy. More now than then. Don't be modest. Come on now. You're on a roll. You've been on a roll for a while here now. You know that.
Appreciate you, my friend. We have had a good couple of weeks. We'll see if we can keep that roll going. And as Michael mentioned, of course, the Lakers now getting set to face the Denver Nuggets in a best of seven coming up in the first round. But we'll talk NBA a little bit later, because we want to start off things, Michael, with a very interesting ESPN article that dropped involving somebody you know very well in Mr. Bill Belichick, hence why you're quoted in the article a number of times. And before we get your thoughts, let me lay out some of the bullet points for our audience who may not have read it just yet, because it is pretty long, written by Don Vanata, Seth Wickersham, and Jeremy Fowler. Big picture, that Belichick thought he had the job in Atlanta, was blindsided when the team went another direction announcing Raheem Morris. A source alleged that the Patriots owner Robert Kraft called Arthur Blank, the owner in Atlanta, twice on the phone warning him not to trust Bill, which was a big part of the Falcons passing on him. The Patriots do deny that conversation took place during the vetting of the process, saying Kraft advocated for Bill to get the job. But the spokesman for Kraft, Stacey James, also, when asked if Kraft ever criticized Bill in conversations with Blank, said Kraft has no recollection of that, but may have done so prior to January. So the growing bad blood that we've known for a while, getting some more pub this week, Michael, what did you make overall of the article and what came out?
Well, I mean, obviously I got a phone call from Seth who asked me a couple questions, which I was on the record, and everything I said was on the record. A lot of people were off the record in the column. But to me, I think there's two factors here in this decision. I think that clearly, from the start, Rich McKay, who is the trustee of the Arthur Blank estate, really wanted no one to come into the organization that was going to upset the structure that they had. Even though Belichick was and his people were told prior to the conversation of the interview that Rich wasn't going to be involved. But this was truly a Machiavellian opportunity for them to systematically make sure that Arthur Blank, who wanted to hire Bill, was outvoted. And I think as you read through the article, I think it frankly makes Atlanta look a little bit, not a little bit, a lot, like, what are they thinking, right? I mean, when they sit there and quoted as saying he wasn't in our top three coaches, when your general manager has won 21 games in the 3 years that he's been there, your assistant general manager presided over the drafting of Justin Fields and Mitchell Trubisky in Chicago and got fired. Like, are you really the ones who should be judging the greatest coach of all time? It's somewhat strange. And then to be boisterous about it, to stick your neck out and say, this is what we thought? Come on now. And Chris Olsen, who's clearly was the guy they're referring to in terms of he didn't want to change their contractual structure to bring more players in to work out in the offseason. I mean, this is just typical what the NFL is. And my phone lit up this morning early, so I knew the column was out. And a lot of people's reaction is, that's why Atlanta never wins. I mean, they're behaving and acting and being quoted as if they won five Super Bowls, and they're treating a coach who has eight Super Bowl rings as if he's lost it. Why don't they ask Matt Rhule if he's lost it? If you have a phone conversation with the man, you actually think you're smarter than him? And at the end of the day, Stormy, for me, like, really, Fontenot and Pace are going to judge Belichick? I mean, that's how you're going to handle this? Like, that's really should have been in the article. I mean, this was clearly Rich McKay wanted Raheem Morris from the start. Rich McKay's son will eventually come work for the Falcons. This was all done internally, and it was planned. And once they got Blank convinced it wasn't the right thing to do, off to the races they went.
Well, and it's funny, too, when you talk about the Falcons and winning, who'd they lose their most recent Super Bowl to again? Okay, yeah, let's just like make sure that we throw that into the conversation as well, Michael. But you said it. Bill didn't even, according to the article, finish in anyone's top three when Blank and his, quote, top lieutenants voted on the team's next coach, ranking each of the candidates. They were even like quotes of saying like he was essentially voted off of the island. And what I liked about like what your perspective was when they put your quotes into it, because, again, there were a lot of unnamed sources in this one. So I like that you were putting your name out in front of it. You said where Belichick not getting fair enough evaluation is if you have a good way of doing something, he's one of the best all-time listeners. He's open to change. It just has to be smart change. And Bill repeatedly, according to the article and things that we had heard throughout that hiring process in Atlanta, was talking to Blank about how he was willing to work with Terry Fontenot. He was even willing to work with Rich McKay. He was willing to give up a lot of the personnel and decision-making things and other roles that he had previously held in New England because he just wanted to be a coach.
Yeah, and yet, you know, they think the game has passed them by. I mean, it's really kind of comical. It really is kind of comical. You know, that you think they've won three Super Bowls in their 3 years down there in Atlanta with 21 wins. I mean, and everything is Arthur Smith's fault, right? So it's just typical of the NFL. It just shows you that if you're if I'm a fan of the Falcons and I'm reading this article, whether I like Belichick or not, the lack of respect shown to him, and obviously the article goes deep into the Kraft conversation about not trusting him. That's the one that has me completely baffled. Like, I don't know what has occurred within that building for Kraft to have not trusted Bill, which is allegedly he told Arthur Blank. I find that hard to believe when he delivered six Super Bowls, when he increases the value of your franchise tremendously. You know, I have a hard time understanding that. But look, this is the NFL. Everybody wants to get credit for success, and they want to tear down the people most responsible for that success. And I think this is just going on. It's almost a Shakespearean play, you know, where everybody becomes a tragic figure within it, and they attack. And I think it's ultimately a wonderful feeling that the former players of the Patriots are the one coming to the defense of Belichick. Like, I was going to be on the record in the column because I have nothing to hide. I watch the man work. I talk to the man. And man knows football more than anybody. I promise you, more than anybody within that organization. They're intimidated by him. He's not outdated. The fact that Terry Fontenot and Ryan Pace are judging him, I find that really hard to believe. But that's the NFL. Mm-hmm. That is why some teams win and some teams don't. That's why Bill Walsh told me in 1984, we're only competing against eight teams here.
If that warning from Kraft to Arthur Blank was true, between that and everything like with the Dynasty documentary that had come out, and it just feels like the negativity that Kraft has is pretty remarkable and a little bit insane, as you pointed out,
Petty,
given the success that they had together. But you know what, Michael, on to better things, and we'll revisit this article again a little bit later on in the show, but the LA Chargers posted a video yesterday that, I mean, just their new head coach, Jim Harbaugh, seems to be living his best life, so much so that it even inspired your new article this week. But our guy, producer Elliot Bowman, put together a couple of the best of clips from the video. So let's hear that, and then we'll talk a little more.
Are you guys part of the team, or what?
Yeah, I am. We all are.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm coaching for him.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. We're in Huntington Beach at the Waterfront RV Park. This is my Quantum Thor motor coach. Kind of inspired by growing up watching the Rockford Files. Got my DVDs, I've been watching that. Nothing will make you feel more like a dad than when you figure out how to, you know, dispose of the waste. RV, I can speak, this has been a help to winning, to working, and
no question. Winning in football, is there anything like it?
It's cured more ills the penicillin.
I've watched this three times and it just gets better every time, Michael.
It's so good. I mean, look, you know, as I've known this man for a long time, and I think when you know, and I've known his love affair as I've had for the Rockford Files, and, you know, as a student at Hofstra University, you know, the Rockford Files would come on late at night, and, you know, I watched every one, and I know everyone, and I know Jim Rockford was the best. That Camaro that he drove, the house in Malibu, where there's still a plaque there, Stormy. If you ever go out to Malibu and you go to where his trailer was parked, there's still a plaque there honoring James Garner, who was a huge, huge Raider fan, by the way. So, you know, he's living his best life. But what I tried to write about today was that Harbaugh's been inspired by the character Jim Rockford and James Garner, but other people in his life too. And he spent his whole life being a head coach. Think about this. He has only been an assistant coach 2 years of his coaching career. He was with us at the Raiders as an assistant quarterback coach. That was 2 years. Never called plays, never did that. Then he went to the University of San Diego to become a head coach. And since that day, he's been a head coach ever since. And his strength and the secret sauce that makes Harbaugh so effective is his ability to take his personality, his competitive spirit, his will to win, and manifest it into the team. And the team becomes a bunch of little Jim Harbaughs who are the most competitive people on planet Earth. And that competitiveness, to me, is what's going to drive this team above the 8.5 win total. Because we've spent the last year talking about the Chargers as underachievers. They got all this talent, but they can't win. Well, what they didn't have was toughness. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that mental fortitude they need to win close games. They've lost way too many of them. I think ultimately now this hire will, and at 8.5, I like the over here a lot. And that's what I wrote about before the draft, because he's going to make a difference.
Everywhere he has gone, that team has exceeded expectations. Yes, you mentioned that win total sitting 8.5 in the AFC West. They are the second shot behind the odds-on favorite Kansas City Chiefs at +300. And he, you speak about a bunch of little Harbaughs. Why do you think J.J. McCarthy and his former Michigan players are getting the love toward the draft that they are? We will be right back. We're just getting started here. Great day of the Lombardi Line ahead.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't yet, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. New look, but all that same great content you're used to, including best bets from all our VSiN show hosts, guests, and experts, betting splits, exclusive articles, including that one we mentioned off the top of the show today, Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers living their best life from our own Michael Lombardi, previews of all of this NBA postseason action, again at VSiN.com, which is where we will start this segment here, talking a little bit of hoops as the Lakers beat the New Orleans Pelicans last night, 110-106 in the play-in, will now get to face the Nuggets in a rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals, in which, of course, the Lakers got swept in that one. Unders, by the way, improved to 15-5 in the NBA play-in game since 2021, 7-0 all time in that 7-8 seed matchup. We'll see if that continues tonight, because we got a couple big Eastern Conference games, which, Michael, ooh, I know, boy. Biggest one in 76ers history, as you have referenced. How are we feeling tonight?
Well, I mean, look, I think being objective, Miami's not the best team, and Jimmy Butler is kind of looks like it's not the same Jimmy Butler we're used to seeing, but it's one game, right? And I think when you're in a one-game situation, you know, mental toughness, the fortitude within the Miami Heat, the way they play, I think this will be a really hard game for Philly, and the big boy's going to have to play more than 20 minutes, to be honest with you here. Miami typically gives them a hard time just because of their mental toughness. Now, they went down to Miami a couple weeks ago and came from behind and won that game late. And so they certainly have the opportunity. Maxey has been dynamic. Obrey has been really good for them this year too. But to me, this comes down to really Miami. Their team has got to find other ways to be productive besides Butler and Bam, and I think that's going to be the key component. Does Duncan Robinson have a great night shooting? They're nowhere near where they were last year. You know, they aren't the same Miami team that went in there as an 8 seed and was able to get to the finals.
Well, people certainly think that the 76ers will get it done because they've been bet up from 4.5 to now 5.5 point favorites. The winner will move on to play the 2 seed Knicks. Loser plays the winner of the Bulls-Hawks game that's coming up later on after that game tonight. But to go back to last night, Michael, we talked a lot in our preview of the game about how that +1.5, it got as high as, I want to say, +2.5 on the Lakers in that game at one point, because it just felt a little bit fishy that maybe people were thinking the Lakers were going to try to lose on purpose so that they would avoid having to play the Denver Nuggets. Someone asked Darvin Ham about this post game, and his answer was chef's kiss. Take a listen.
That was a report of what?
It was TV talking and stuff. It was that maybe.
Saying what again?
I'd be better off if you guys lost this game to avoid Denver in the first round, to play.
Insane asylum sources say.
Sure. It wasn't sourced. It was just chatter.
Just someone that just got out of the insane asylum. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, they weren't going to lose on purpose, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, so much we get hit with is the analytics of all this, right? I'm not blaming it on the analytical community, but if you understand players and you understand how they operate and the competitive nature between Anthony Davis, between LeBron James, I don't think they're going to back down to any – they're not afraid to play any team. Like, that's not really their mantra. You know, they wanted to prove themselves. I think they were playing hard. Now, look, I got to admit, I thought that Zion played as – when he was playing, mm-hmm. I thought he was really good. He was unbelievable. They're too small to match up to the Lakers, and every time they needed a rebound to come back and kind of get the lead, they couldn't do it. Anthony Davis came through and made plays. But, look, you know, he's going to have to play for them to be able to beat Sacramento in the next game. But – to me, the Lakers were always going to try because that's who they are. Now, you know, they're going to run to a buzzsaw in Denver. They're going to have to play at a much higher level than they played against New Orleans last night. But, you know, I don't think those guys are scared or intimidated at all.
Yeah, LeBron said that when it comes to the Nuggets, they're going to have to play mistake-free basketball, which certainly feels like the case. But something we talked about yesterday is the importance of the Lakers to win this game to get a little bit of that extra rest for their stars, for Anthony Davis, for LeBron James, who is older, right? Like, and now they get to wait until Saturday to start game one against Denver. They're headed out to Colorado on Thursday so that they can get acclimated and get comfortable. Davis said he expects to be 100% by Saturday, and L.A. has been hot lately. They've won 12 of their last 15 games. They're playing pretty good basketball right now. So let's see if they can steal a couple in an important round one series where Denver might be a type of team that could need a little bit of time to rev up. I think I'd rather play Denver early than late, considering what we saw last year from them and the way that they went on a tear. But you mentioned, Michael, the Pelicans side of this and Zion Williamson. He has 40 points, 11 boards, 5 assists, but has to come out of the game with 3 minutes to go limping off the court. So what is his availability going to be come Friday when they have to play the Kings? They are laying one in that matchup at home, total 216.5. And Brandon Ingram, who was just in his second game back, he had to check out with 7.5 minutes to go as well. So will he be on a pitch count?
Yeah, I mean, that's the key, right? I mean, when they lost Zion and Alvarado, he was playing really well, and they had great opportunities to kind of get the lead. They turned the ball over late, you know, a chance on the throw over to the corner. But for me, this is going to be really hard because the Kings are still a good team. I mean, look, let's face it. The Kings are better than this Warrior team, which is incomplete. You know, like, where are they going? I think that's the biggest thing. And we said this yesterday on the show. You know, the Warriors are the worst thing to be in sports, and that's too old. And when you're too old, you know, you think you can win a title because you have experience. But what you realize, and we're going to find this out too with the Thunder, is you need some youth. You know, you need youth with experience. You just don't need older players.
They lose, the Warriors do, last night, 118-94. Were able to bring it close in the third quarter within a point, but then obviously just off and running by the Kings late in the fourth quarter. Klay Thompson, 0 of 10 from the floor, 0 of 6 from 3, 0 points in 32 minutes. And he, of course, now becomes a free agent. According, though, to their head coach in Steve Kerr, he wants to keep the band together moving forward to next year. Take a listen.
If Mike Dunleavy or someone else in the front office asked you, you know, if you believe that Steph, Klay, and Draymond are capable of making another championship run, what would you tell them?
I would say I believe they can. You know, these guys are all still really damn good players. So, hopefully we can re-sign Klay. Draymond and Steph are both, under contract. So we're going to roll it back next year.
And Curry also said after the game, quote, I can't see myself not with those two guys. I understand this league changes experience so much together. At the end of the day, I know they want to win. I want to win. But to your point, Michael, they are aging, and Klay Thompson's going to have to take a serious pay cut if he's going to stay on this roster. But he's not the same player he was 4 years ago.
No, I mean, and how could he be, right? Father Time gets everybody, right? And when you look at the injuries that he's had to go along with Father Time and then Steph trying to do what he does and Draymond not always playing within control of himself. I mean, this is hard. I think Bob Myers obviously got out at the right time. He decided to go into football, right? Why not go over and help the Washington football team as opposed to, you know, when they blow the Wiseman pick, right? I think you have the second pick overall in the draft. You have a chance to really set your franchise up. And we see this happen in the NBA. We see it happen in all sports. When you miss on that pick, like the 76ers missed with Markelle Fultz at the third pick overall, or Okafor, the fourth pick overall, you know, it really hampers your franchise. You just don't overcome that. You can massage your way around it, but at the end of the day, you need stars in the NBA. And when you lose a star that you potentially could have, now whether they would have picked LaMelo Ball, I don't know. You know, Halliburton went 12 in that draft. So it's just really challenging. And I think to me, you're going to have to make a decision here that are we better rebuilding or are we better trying to piece it together? And where can we go if we do? You know, where are we going to go if we try to piece this together? I just think it's really, really a hard thing to do. Sometimes you have to tear down. And I think Mike Dunleavy Jr. is going to have to tear it down. I know Kerr's not going to say he doesn't want to coach those guys. But I think privately, Kerr's got to say to himself, where am I going? Now, he just signed an extension, yeah. So he's part of the solution.
And obviously, it is a business at the end of the day, right? But when you do think about what those guys have given to the organization, the championships that they've won, Hall of Fame players, it's hard to imagine that this might be the last we have seen of that great era. And Golden State, we know, has missed the playoffs in three of the last 5 years, but they did still win an NBA championship in that time. Do you think that Steph Curry will get another title in Golden State?
I don't think he can get one in Golden State, Stormy. I don't see how that happens. I really don't. You know, I think they're going to have to do some significant things to change their roster. And, you know, they're going to have to make some moves. I just, right now, you have to believe what you see, right? What you see in Klay is what Klay is. What you see in Draymond is what Draymond. They're still good players, but again, are they carrying the franchise? And you're asking an awful lot of a great player like Steph Curry to continue to carry. We saw this at the end of Kobe's career. You just can't do it anymore. And again, this comes back to team building. How are we going to get to fix this team?
And again, to your point, in a winner-go-home game, Klay Thompson, 0 points in 32 minutes on the court. Also, we do have opening lines for the series of Denver and the Lakers. Denver opened minus 450. They're now minus 310 against the Lakers, who took some money, plus 250 for them. We'll be right back. Adam Burke joins us on the program next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Remember, everybody, for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits here at VSiN for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out not only where the public's betting based on the number of tickets, but where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, though. It's a limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line. And while we're talking a lot of NBA today because of the play-in games yesterday and into tonight, there was some other really big NBA news that came out this morning. And with us being a gambling network, very much so top of mind, that now former Raptor center Jontay Porter is officially released and hit with a lifetime ban from the NBA for gambling. A league investigation found that Porter did violate league rules by disclosing confidential information to sports bettors, limiting his own participation in one or more games for betting purposes, and himself also found gambling on the NBA. To help us break down this topic and a whole lot more, we welcome in VSiN's own Adam Burke on the Progressive guest line, doing great work as the managing editor here at VSiN, and has a new article up on VSiN.com right now on this very topic. Adam, huge news today in the gambling world.
Yeah, really big news to be sure, Stormy, with Jontay Porter. You know, not only finding out that he influenced some of the prop bets that were out there, but also that, you know, he bet on the NBA, which we know is a cardinal sin in any sport. But I think something that's kind of interesting, and, you know, I did write up a quick news piece over at vsin.com on this. I didn't want to editorialize it too much, but I think something that's really, really interesting about the way that this press release is structured is that it starts with an associate of his betting on his player props and then his influence on those by not playing. It's almost a secondary point that he bet on the NBA as a member of the NBA and as a member of the G League team. And then Adam Silver's quote down toward the bottom of the press release says that, you know, they also want to look at the sufficiency of the regulatory framework, including the types of bets offered on games and players. And of course, there was a lot of discussion during the conference tournaments, the NCAA tournament, about banning wagering on player props for college basketball. I don't think that the sports books would go for this, but it certainly seems like Adam Silver is trying to either passively or aggressively say, hey, these player props are really dangerous because the individual can influence that. It takes more hands to kind of influence a game. So I don't know what comes forward of this, but I thought the structure of the press release and Silver's quote were both really, really interesting in this whole saga.
You know, and I think, Adam, you're right. I think these prop bets in basketball are, you know, when you get towards the end of the game, and we learned this with in the referee scandal with Tim Donaghy, you know, where they're calling fouls at the end of the game that are meaningless and, you know, nobody's really paying attention to it, but yet it's happening and all of a sudden the line gets covered and it goes in the favor of what we learned in that investigation. So I think because of that investigation, I think Silver needs to be really critical, and I think he did the right thing coming down hard and heavy, because this can't, or else they're going to eliminate the prop betting in the marketplace, because if they can't get control of it, and in the NBA, you know, we see guys not play all the time. We see guys getting pulled in a game. You know, we see a lot of retreating. I think it was the most, 243 games were decided by 20 points or more in the NBA, the most in NBA history. So I think he's got to be really careful here.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, you know, a lifetime ban certainly sets a very strong precedent as it pertains to, you know, what to do in these types of situations. That being said, it was Jontay Porter. Like, it's not a star player. It's not a guy remotely close to being a star player, not even really a big contributor in any way, shape, or form. He was a guy on a two-way contract. What happens, hypothetically, if this is somebody who's a, you know, bigger name player, a higher value player, something like that? Now, certainly, it's going to be more difficult to influence them because they're making more money. But it is something that I'm sure Silver and the league office, yeah, I'm sure it crept into their minds during this whole investigation. So, yeah, they had to set a strong precedent. They had to come in really, really strong on Porter, to be sure. But again, I just thought that that language and the structure of the press release, the structure of the infractions, because you would think, hey, this guy bet on the NBA. That's the headline. That's the most important thing. It wasn't. It was kind of the secondary headline in this whole press release. So we'll see what happens going forward. But, you know, obviously, I mean, the NBA is really at this point second to the NFL in terms of betting handle. It's a wildly popular league with a lot of player prop action, parlays, same game parlays, all those types of things. I think it's kind of an interesting discussion that will just continue as we go forward.
And how silly, just in my opinion, for a guy who is at least like making an NBA salary to risk that for what ultimately ended up being, on the NBA bets he made, $22,000 in winnings. And for the people that were trying to bet these massive bets on props, like that 80,000 prop bet was frozen and not paid out. So nothing really came of this. And something I also think is important to underscore that was at the very bottom of this press release is that the suspicious bets involving Porter's performance in the Raptors March 20 game were brought to the NBA's attention by the licensed sports betting operators. Like, that to me shows that the side of this relationship with the NBA's relationship with the sportsbooks is working, that they're the ones that identified this and said something is up and were able to nip it in the bud quickly. And now Jontay Porter is made the example of. Like, I think this is a sign that the system works, if anything.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true, Storm. I think it's an excellent point to make because, you know, look, when you think about the way that sports betting used to be, you know, prior to PASPA being overturned and repealed, it was all offshore, right? It was the wild, wild west. There were very loose gambling laws in the countries where these sports books were operating. So who knows how often things like this did happen. Now, of course, you know, the rise of player prop betting is something that has kind of come about as a result of legal sports betting in the U.S. You didn't really get a whole lot of that in the offshore world, but you could have very well had these things that, you know, weren't really talked about, weren't really brought to light. But the sports books definitely have incentive to report these types of things because, just as I mentioned, silver from Jonte Porter is kind of hinting towards the integrity, the validity of betting on player mm-hmm. props. Jonte Porter is not getting a handle more often than not on a player prop. Other guys absolutely are. So that's something that I think, you know, the sports books are kind of like, all right, we need to get in front of this. We need to hold up our end of the responsibility so that we can try to continue to operate in this world where we have a good working relationship and we can offer all these different betting options that we want.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's what the misconception is around, is everybody thinks there's some kind of illegal activity when both sides, the bettor and the house, wants complete integrity all the time. So let's shift a little bit here. Let's talk about something that's near and dear to my heart. Tonight's game with the Heat and the 76ers. Do you have a play in this one at all, Adam?
No, honestly, I mean, the NBA is a market that I have a very hard time following. Certainly, I get more interested in it when playoff time rolls around because you know who's going to play. I mean, you know, it's not one of those things where some guy's getting scratched 90 minutes or an hour before the game and you're sitting there with a bad bet. So the NBA is definitely not a market that I find myself diving into a whole lot. But, you know, again, I think it is important to bettors that are out there to realize that, I mean, first of all, with the play-in tournament, you know, it's not fully win or go home, but it kind of is. So that's one of those things where everybody will be fully invested, will be fully engaged. So at least there's that. You can kind of bet the game straight, just using the stats, your ratings, whatever it is, as opposed to just kind of wondering, okay, if I lock in this bet, who's going to be announced out 45 minutes before the game?
Meanwhile, while you don't have a bet in the play-in action today, I know you're always locked and loaded on the baseball front. You and Dustin doing a great job on the DraftKings pod. We have a handful of games already in action, but still 11 more to come throughout the course of the day. Anything you really like that people should know about?
You know, I think I really like the Double Play podcast, which you alluded to there with me and Dustin. New episodes every Monday, Thursday. So that's definitely something you should check out. As you mentioned, it is part of the DraftKings podcast network. But so far, so good with that show. And Dustin and I have a really good rapport, good chemistry. We look at the game from different perspectives. So I get something that you definitely want to add to your podcast rotation there. As far as a game that I like for tonight, I like the Angels first five against the Rays. You got Reed Detmers on the bump for the Angels. You got Zach Littell going for the Rays. What's really interesting about this game is that Littell just faced the Angels. Now, he pitched okay. He had some control issues. That's typically not a thing for him, but he just faced them a week ago. Reed Detmers has not faced the Rays yet. So the Angels are getting a guy that they just planned for, just prepared for, just saw his stuff up close and personal. And the Rays, meanwhile, are getting Detmers, a guy who struck out almost 41% of opposing batters here so far this season. So I think the Angels will have more balls in play. I think that gives them more opportunities to score runs. I have no interest in the full game here because both bullpens were worked extensively yesterday. Not really sure who's fresh and who's available and who's not. But I do think the Angels for the first five, worthy of a look here tonight in that matchup against the Rays.
Adam, you're the man. Appreciate your time so much as always. Thanks for doing
Adam.
This with us. And sorry Absolutely. That we bombarded you with so much NBA. Just big news today.
No, it's all sorry. Good. No problem. It's that time of year.
That's Adam Burke. Make sure you check out the daily write-ups, MLB best bets every single day at VSiN.com, our VSiN managing editor, as well as we referenced, the Double Play podcast. He and Dustin Sweetelson, who is one of the hosts of Sharp Money, doing a great job on the DraftKings podcast network with regular episodes twice a week. I know also in the daily article, there is another best bet aside from that Angels first 5-1. So make sure that you check it out. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. When we come back, we're continuing to dive into each division from a draft perspective in the NFL, what these teams should be or need to be doing with their first selections in the draft. We'll be right back.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament, which rolls on tonight through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code VSIN. New customers that do bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's VSIN, V-S-I-N, as your promo code only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Back here on the Lombardi line, some great NBA action coming up tonight. The NFL draft now just a little over a week away before we'll have round one on our television screens. And with that, Michael, we just saw the official news come across the timeline that the one and only Bill Belichick, who we led the show with talking about today, is going to be a part of ESPN's draft coverage, joining Pat McAfee. How cool is that?
Yeah, I think it's great. He's going to be in the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going into the Batcave there, Stormy. There we go. And so, yeah, it'll be good. Look, I you know, everybody critiques Belichick on his draft acumen. You know, you don't win six Super Bowls if you don't know anything about player personnel, which is a fact. But and been to eight. But I think ultimately this will give people a sneak preview into how thorough of a job he does in terms of draft preparation and his knowledge of the National Football League. I thought the most ridiculous thing about that article, and not belabor the article, was that people were saying that, you know, he might be out of touch. Like, he's some guy who's been in a senior citizen's home and hasn't watched football for a while. Like, seriously, it's just ridiculous. And you're going to find it out if people that watch that show and watch our show, too, you're going to find out how much he knows about the players and how much he knows about the game.
I'm particularly excited about it, Michael, just because the Bill Belichick that we typically get as the media in those press conferences is the short answers. We're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Kansas City, right? Like, that's what we always get. And so in this setting, to get more of the guy that Matt Rhule was just quoted so much as talking about so glowingly, and the way that he was embarrassed about his own football knowledge, having Bill Belichick around, and the way that he shared information, I think that's just going to be awesome for those of us mere mortals to learn a little bit about his football brain through that process.
Yep. No question. It's going to be educational. He'll put a few of those ESPN analysts to shame, I'll say that.
Yeah, the mock draft extraordinaires.
Now, I won't mention any names, Stormy. I'm not going to mention any names. Maybe somebody who has dry cleaning in their car. I don't know who I'm talking about. You never know.
Somebody you could smell a little something that rises up, perhaps. Maybe not. We don't know.
I don't want to go down that road.
You're my favorite, Michael. That's great. Let's continue with this draft conversation, though, as we have been diving in the last couple of days into different divisions and what each of those teams' immediate needs are, and specifically what they might do with that early round or first selection for each team. And today we're going to take a look at the AFC South. Starting with the Tennessee Titans, they've got 8 picks in the 2024 draft, owning that number 7 overall selection. This is a team that finished 6-11 last season, moved on from Mike Vrabel. They have a new head coach in Brian Callahan. Rand Carthon continuing to wheel and deal, trying to overhaul this roster and turn around the team this season. As you look at their draft needs, what they should be doing with the first round, offensive line, a -350 favorite, Michael, does it feel like it has to be O-line as they continue to retool that unit with Brian Callahan's dad coaching them up?
It's that obvious, right? Everybody knows that they can't continue to go down that road. They signed Cushenberry from Denver to give them their starting center, right? You know, the right side of their line, Brushkill was with the 49ers. He was there. He's over 30 years old. But for me, this team has to get their tackle situation handled. And they've drafted it in the third round with Pate Ferre. I think that's how you say his name. He started at left tackle, not very good. They signed Andre Dillard last year. Paid him $10 million to be the left tackle. That didn't work out. They cut him immediately. And so they're tackle poor. And whenever you're tackle poor, that's a hard thing to be, right? And so you're going to have to draft the tackle. And they've signed a lot of guys in the offseason. You know, they've added players to the roster, 3 defensively that will be starters and 3 offensively that will be starters, Pollard, Cushenberry, and, of course, Calvin Ridley. But that offensive line needs to be addressed. They traded for Leroy Watson, who was with Bill at Cleveland last year. He likes him as a potential player, but they need a starting left tackle. If they're going to find out whether Levis is good enough, they better protect him.
Joe Alt, Notre Dame, the great tackle over there, minus 175 favorite to be that selection at number seven. Let's go to the Indianapolis Colts here, who have seven picks in the draft, starting at number 15. It's the first time since Andrew Luck retired in 2019 that this team is not looking for a quarterback, because they have Anthony Richardson, who reportedly is looking really good right now as he comes back in his rehabilitation from ending his season early with injury. They are plus 110 to take a cornerback with the first selection, but nothing odds on for the Colts like we've seen with a number of other teams. So potentially more options: wide receiver plus 225, tight end plus 370. Thoughts there on the Colts' immediate needs and what they might do at 15?
Well, they signed Raquan Davis from the Miami Dolphins to be an inside defensive player. I think this team needs outside speed. They need to rush the passer. I think if they get the right rusher, if it makes it down to them, that's an easy one. They're going to pick a rusher. There's no question. They need more ability to rush from their four-man front, which they have to do. This is a team that really has no one that they signed that will be in the starting lineup from free agency, and they had over $50 million of cap room. So this is about, they signed their own players. They're trying to improve their players. They need more defensive linemen. They need a corner. I think this will be a defensive-type draft unless there's an offensive lineman that they feel like they can't pass, right? You know, because that offensive line has gone through some changes. But for me, everybody's going to want them to draft a receiver. They really like Josh Downs. They paid Michael Pittman. Alex Pierce started to play really well for them last year. They've got two good running backs on the team. Well, Jonathan Taylor, they lost Zach Moss. So, you know, Taylor's going to get the bulk of the carries. But this is a defensive line draft to me. They've got to hit there. And if they don't hit there, take a corner.
D-line 7-1 for the Indianapolis Colts to take. Again, the favorite is corner at plus 110. The Colts are plus 340 in the division. The Titans are the longest shot at 10-1. And then we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at plus 240, the second shortest shot in the division, a team that was the odds-on favorite to win it last year before the Texans went on the run that they did. Trevor Lawrence, with an up-and-down season, dealt with injuries. The Jags are starting at number 17 overall. They did address a number of needs on the offensive line and defensive line in free agency, but were unable to re-sign Calvin Ridley. Corner is the odds-on favorite for the position of first drafted player at minus 185, yep. And wide receivers right there at plus 200.
Well, I think corner certainly looks like it could be something that they would do. They signed Ronald Darby in the free agency, but I don't consider him a starter. Tyson Campbell, when he was injured last year, it affected their team. They need to improve in that area. I see them taking a corner. I also see them taking a defensive tackle, right? I know they signed Armstead. I know they've got Hamilton inside to play there, but they need that, right? They need another tackle. They need a big year out of Trayvon Walker. That's going to be the key. Trayvon Walker's got to play well for them. He's got to give them that pass rush to go alongside of Josh Allen. But that's, to me, is the area, right? They've signed a lot of money in free agency, right? They've got Kirk, and they paid Zay Jones. They got Gabe Davis. They signed Duvernay. There's four receivers. They also have Evan Ingram, who they want to get the football to. I look for this to be a defensive lineman or a corner, Stormy.
Yeah, the D-line position, that is 10-1 if you think you can get some value there. Corner, again, minus 185, and you listed out what they currently have in that room. Certainly doesn't feel like enough given the quarterback talent that is in the AFC. And then last one here, it's the Houston Texans world, Michael, and we just seem to be living in it with the way that this team has been built up. They're the favorite to repeat now in the AFC South at plus 110, win total over under 9.5. And if you look at their odds for first player drafted, it's all over the board. It kind of seems like they can do what they want. So what should they want at that spot?
I think they're looking corner-wise. I know they signed Jeff Okuda, the high draft pick of Detroit that really hasn't materialized. They've signed a lot of backup players. I would be shocked if they didn't try to trade up to get another corner to go alongside of Derek Stingley. Mm. I think that would be something. Now, look, they play a lot of zone. The system that they run is the 49er system. So if they could get another defensive lineman, although they've signed, of all the players they've signed this year, and they've signed a multitude, 14, six of them are in the defensive front, which shows you where they put their emphasis. Could they use another offensive lineman? Absolutely. But for me, I think this is about trying to find a corner or trying to find another defensive player that could really help their team, because they're pretty well set. I mean, everything else is going to be backup. That's why I think they have so many picks, most of them later in the draft. They're not all going to make the team. And so I look for them to try to take some of those picks to move up to get the one player that they could put in their starting lineup and say, yeah, this guy's a starter for us. Right now, Desmond King's their nickel, right? So if they made Okuda the nickel and they drafted a starting corner, you know, but then you could say, well, they got Miles Bryant. They signed C.J. Henderson. They've added depth to the team. They need that one guy.
Yeah. Currently, their first selection isn't until number 42 overall. We'll see if they do ultimately trade up. Offensive line and D-line edge, both favored at the top of the odds board for first drafted player at plus 200, corner plus 300, safety plus 500, and linebacker plus 650. The Texans certainly appear to be the team to beat after what they did in the massive turnaround last year under DeMeco Ryans. They had C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson at the top of the draft last year. No first-round picks as of right now. We're going to hit the break, resetting with Hour 2 when we come back with what's on Michael's mind and some more big news of the day. We'll be right back.